Hi, and welcome to Adventure Dog Podcast, the podcast all about doing amazing things with your doggos. I'm Nathan Berry, she's Rue the Shark, and this is Episode 9. Today, we recite our favorite mottos. Rue ropes up, and I interview the proud dad to Penny Dog, a rescue who made an unbelievable transformation from a frightened pup abandoned on the streets of Brooklyn to a confident climbing and canyoneering virtuoso. I have to give a bit of credit for being the active, adventurous person that I am today to my time in the Boy Scouts when I was younger. But what I really learned from those years was exactly what their motto says: be prepared. I can't emphasize that enough. No matter what your plans are, if you're hiking a mountain, if you're driving across the country, or even if you're just taking daily trips to the dog park, you should always be prepared for whatever situation can happen. And most of the time, it's pretty simple stuff. It's things you already do without even thinking about it, like, you know, putting gas in your car and Googling your destination, or making sure you've got plenty of treats and water before you head out the door. So here's a few things to think about and to kind of help you be prepared. Know before you go. Adventuring with your dog means that you really have to know the rules and regulations of any destination you're headed to. Check to make sure that dogs are allowed in the first place, and if there's any limitations. We get really comfortable going to a lot of these places, and we don't actually know what the rules are at some. So even in places that are dog-friendly, they usually require leashes. So always keep a leash on hand just in case, even if you're not going to use it. I've gotten into the habit of keeping a spare leash in the car just in case I come across a lost dog or a stray, or in case my normal leash breaks. Next, make sure you have the right permit for the area that you're headed to. It definitely helps to check online, and it's so simple. Most places that we go to these days have something online to see if there's a day permit or a usage fee. And that way, you can be prepared in advance with cash for, let's say there's a drop envelope, which is really typical at many trailheads in national areas and state parks like that. Most of those will also include dog fees. I can't tell you how many times I've shown up to a spot, forgotten to bring cash, and had to sit and write a check to put into a drop envelope. Cash is just so much easier, and it's always good to know that stuff beforehand. Other than dog rules, take a look at the weather. Especially with summer coming on, afternoon thunderstorms can pop up really fast. And knowing that information can help you plan your adventure for the right time of day, or to be prepared for the weather at whatever time of day you might be out there. And while you're checking things online, using Google Maps, I found you can download maps of your specific area for use offline. And that's really helpful if you're adventuring in an area that has little or no signal. And then that way you don't have to waste your data out in the middle of nowhere trying to download a map. So then there's also first aid. For a very small price, you can keep a first aid bag in your car that has all the essentials for yourself and for your dogs. I won't cover every single item that I keep in my first aid kit here, but here are a few important things that I would suggest. For cuts and scrapes, having an antibiotic spray to clean the wound, and that's pretty much the same for humans and dogs. styptic powder is also a good thing to keep on hand to stop the bleeding. And once you get it clean, using gauze or non-adhesive bandages, and then waterproof vet wrap tape. It's a self-adhering tape because it's really important not to use an adhesive tape that will stick to their fur and kind of be painful to remove. Hydrogen peroxide is useful for inducing vomiting. If your dog gets into something that's toxic or poisonous, but you just want to use the right amount, the recommended dosage is about 1 milliliter per pound of weight, so up to a maximum of 45 milliliters. To put that into a real-world measurement, a teaspoon is about 5 milliliters. But I don't recommend sitting there with a teaspoon trying to administer anything. Instead, you can also get a plastic oral syringe that has measurements on the side of it. Make sure it's in milliliters. But that will help solve your measuring problem, and it's a much easier way to administer. Also, most vets recommend using milk of magnesia to absorb any toxins or poisons, so I'll add that to the list. Really important, before you go anywhere, scan and keep your pet's vaccination, rabies, and license info. You can also add your vet's contact and put that onto a USB thumb drive. You can just simply keep that in your car for emergencies, for when you're traveling, and you need to show proof of documents, for instance. Other than that, I suggest just having all the typical first aid supplies that you would need for a human kit. And if you're unsure of what to include, I mean, there's tons of kits that you can buy in the store or online, or just get yourself a good checklist and make it yourself. I found a small first aid bag on Amazon and just bought supplies to fill it. It was much cheaper than a pre-made kit, and now I have all these extra supplies that I keep at home just in case. And I keep the bag strapped to the passenger side headrest in my car, so I always know where it is. And it has just kind of a Velcro tearaway that I can just grab it. It's small enough that I can throw it in my backpack if I'm going on an overnight trail too. And Rue wants me to add in her favorite motto, which is, be happy. When you're adventuring with your pups, keep in mind that their happiness is the most important thing. Don't force your pup into something that they don't want to go into willingly. Be patient, and with the right introduction to a new activity, they will gladly follow you, or they'll probably lead the way. Other than that, know when to call it a day. Pay attention to their stress and fatigue level, and take breaks, especially when it's really hot or if it's really cold out. Remember, it's just all about having fun. And this last bit leads me to the interview. It's always cool to see your dog take on a new activity and to begin to master something. But what about when a dog takes on a whole new life? Today, I talk with Blaine and his rescued pit mix, Penny, who has just an awesome story of recovery from being abused and abandoned to being an amazing desert dog that can tackle anything. Hopefully we're not too far in.
Yeah, I'll just take it from the top.
Okay, cool. So yeah, if you'll introduce yourself and your dog.
Sure. My name's Blaine. I am the proud owner of Penny Dog. Penny's a pit mix rescue that I've had for about 5 years. Okay. I believe she's somewhere between 6 and 7 years old. Not entirely sure, because she is a rescue. For about the last 4 years, we've lived in Las Vegas, and I take her with me to do pretty well everything.
Yeah, and it looks like y'all do a lot of stuff. And you're on Instagram as @PennyDog.
That's right, Penny Dog with an I, P-E-N-N-I, dog.
And you've also got a really great website at www.pennydog.com. Again, Penny with an I. So she is a rescue, and she's got an amazing backstory. So I'm not really going to try to get into it myself. I'm just going to let you kind of tell this, because you've actually broken it down into like a chapter-based thing, and I think that it's an amazing way to tell her story. Could you go into that just a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So I've been looking for a dog for the better part of probably 6 months, and at this time I was living in New Jersey. I'd reached out to several rescue groups, seemed to keep getting rejected. They not thinking I'd be a good owner, more or less because I was working an office job, you know, your standard like 8 to 6 p.m. Yeah. every day. And then I finally came across this rescue that had Penny, and, you know, I kind of explained to him I was looking for a very particular personality. I do a lot of volunteer work, so I wanted to make sure I was getting a dog that would be able to accompany me on all that volunteer work. And they more or less said, yeah, she seems like a great fit. She is super timid, just really shy overall, scared of everything, and kind of the backstory there. She'd been locked in the basement of a drug house to start her life, and they believed she was there for some time between a year and a year and a half. Pretty messy situation. Eventually, those owners abandoned her on the street. Some cops picked her up along with a couple other dogs, immediately brought them to the pound, and they did an immediate evaluation on Penny's behavior, and she was... The evaluation, the most sad thing you've ever read. Like, everything was like, you know, presented her with food. She put her head down, tucked her tail, and was shaking with fear. Presented her with a toy, same thing. Tried to pet her, same thing. So basically, because of that evaluation, they put her on the euthanasia list. And
what was her physical condition like when you got her?
Or
when they brought her in?
I guess like muscular skeletal, she didn't look great. She did have meat on her bones. She wasn't starved. It didn't look like she'd ever been fought or anything, but you could tell like the stress of being on the street, plus she was in heat when she was at, out on the street as well.
Okay.
Like the hormones like definitely took a toll on her physical appearance.
Yeah. What was the rescue group that you ended up going through or that hooked you up with Penny?
The rescue group's based out of southern New Jersey. It's called Fur Friends in Need. So been around quite a while. I've saved, I don't even know how many dogs at this point, and I was working with them directly when I found her online.
So once you got her and you kind of started talking about how you went to meet her, how did that go when you first went in to meet her?
And so the rescue group had given me a little bit of a warning, not due to aggression or anything, just because she was so scared. Said we're going to need to take it pretty slow during the introductions. We met at just outside of a PetSmart in between my house and theirs, and they took her out of the car. I wanted to go pet her, but again, they're kind of saying, hang on. So I just went over and sat along the wall, and they kind of casually walked her up to me. And after all those warnings, she kind of walked up to me, just sat right in my lap and started panting. And like in that exact moment, I was like, all right, done. This is the dog for me.
Yeah. It seems like she kind of immediately went right to you and just kind of connected with you.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm not sure why. They had a pretty surprised reaction. And, you know, if there's any opinion you can trust, it's that of a rescue group, and particularly the folks that are fostering a bunch of dogs. Like,
yeah.
No one knows personalities like they do. So when they described her to be kind of the perfect dog for what I was looking for, plus she had that kind of good positive reaction when we first met, like there was no hesitation for me.
And I always think that a dog is a perfect barometer for what a human is, you know, for reading a human. If a dog likes you, you're probably a pretty decent person.
I'd like to think so.
They have the perfect perception. They can read a human better than another human. So yeah, if the dog likes you, then you're doing something right.
Yeah, their sixth sense is undeniable, no doubt about it.
Yeah. How long did you, did you immediately take her from there? I mean, were you able to go with her, or was there a process of getting her?
I actually had to wait several days. When she was taken in by the pound, she had an abscess growing from her ribs.
Okay.
It was a big exposed tumor. So the rescue group took her to the vet. She underwent surgery to remove it. And we were waiting on actually the results of whether or not it was cancerous before,
yeah,
I was able to take her back home. Fortunately, everything came back negative. She was all clear. And that, and I guess it was maybe a week or so after we first got together that I was able to take her home.
Okay. And so were you living in New Jersey at the time?
Yeah. So I was there. I was there for about 2.5 years for work.
Okay.
Like a typical urban New Jersey environment, I guess, houses stacked up right on top of each,
yeah,
other. So we didn't have a yard, or much of one at least. Couldn't put in a doggy door. So she was kind of confined to the house whenever I wasn't around.
Sure. Well, how long after getting her were you able to make the move out to Vegas?
I believe it was somewhere around 8 months or so later. I had been kind of itching to get out of New Jersey myself, you know, having grown up on a farm, like this dense urban area with not a whole lot of open space around me wasn't exactly what I was after. So when the phone rang for the job in Las Vegas, I was quick to jump on that one. So it was actually February of 2015 that we moved out to Las Vegas.
Okay.
And you know, that was a pretty stressful time, I'd say, for both of us. I'd say the phone rang and I took it. It really was that quick. I moved out here on 9 days' notice. So it was a full sprint to get out here. But from, you know, the moment we landed in Vegas, we had a lot more open space. You know, surprise, surprise, everybody thinks that Vegas is just the strip, but it's actually a big city,
yeah,
with an enormous park system and just an infinite amount of stuff to do around the perimeter of the city.
Yeah, and I think also a lot of people think, oh, Vegas is just out in the middle of the desert and it's just empty and boring, and it's really not. I mean, just within minutes of the Vegas area, there's just so much to see and do. So the transition to Vegas was probably pretty great, but kind of going back to that 7-8 months that you originally had her in New Jersey, how was her original transition from, you know, being the scared dog to where were you able to get with her in that 7 or 8 months? How much progress did you make?
I'd say during that time, I was 100% committed to her rehabilitation. That said, it was really, really difficult.
Sure.
You know, in the first 6 months, I don't think we ever made eye contact, not comfortably at least.
Really?
I'd look at her, she'd turn her head and cower. I'd pull out a fork for dinner and she would cower. Everything was a battle.
Yeah.
It was a lot of work. And it's important if you're taking in a rescue not to underestimate what that might mean. So, you know, she was terrified of everything under the sun. So I had to be really cautious in my movements, really cautious in whatever I was moving around the house. Because there was always a risk of spooking her, and who knows what kind of incremental damage that could have done to her.
Yeah. Did you ever use any, like a trainer or anything? Or, I mean, did you go this on your own?
I never hired a trainer for her to spend time with, but I read just an infinite amount of articles online.
Okay.
I was watching YouTube videos. I was doing everything I could to educate myself.
Sure.
And I guess the reason I didn't really tend towards a trainer is so many of her quirks were so unique.
Yeah.
Like there were just so many just things I'd never encountered in any other dog that she would just seem to display on any given day.
Okay. That, and they can be really, really expensive too. And there's typically, I find that there's so much really good information out there. Of course, you have to do a lot of research into it, but it sounds like you did pretty good. Was there ever a point, kind of like a turning point, where you realized, okay, everything's going to be okay? Or was it just a constant kind of progression?
It was lots of peaks and valleys. So I think probably over the first 6 months that I had her, the main focus was Socialization, that's both with people and other animals, as well as just trying to find some kind of comfort in her setting. With people and animals, she never displayed any kind of aggression or anything. It was just general wariness. So it was trying to get her to be comfortable in the presence of others. And we, in those first several months, it got to the point if there was one, two, three people at my house, she was fine. But, you know, we passed this critical threshold where once there was a few more people, once there was a little bit more volume in the room, she would split. And she was instantly in the bathtub seeking refuge. In terms of the settings, everything outside, whether it was a moving vehicle, somebody hammering in some nails in their house, everything scared her. So what that turned into was a lot of like midnight and 1 a.m. walks through town. So, you know, I had to give up a little bit of sleep, but, you know, well worth it on my end. And slowly kind of got acclimated to what was going on around her. We could take walks earlier in the evenings up until eventually we were able to walk during the day. And I could still visibly see her, you know, shaking from time to time if there were loud noises, but there was a very tangible amount of progression that happened during those first several months. Okay. But that's not where it ended, though. You know, it was about that time we moved to Las Vegas. She still had a ton of quirks. A basketball. I'd pull out my basketball to head to the court, and she would take off running. If I turned too fast and kind of looked at her, that you'd see her cower a little bit. She was just acting really almost depressed and kind of lethargic, I guess. And you know, at this point I'd had her a year.
Yeah.
And I was starting to really have my doubts. I felt like I was doing absolutely everything I could. I was seeking as much advice as I could from everybody else. And I was really starting to have a concern. It's like, you know, maybe she just doesn't like me and that's it. Cause I could see her respond really positively to women in particular.
Sure.
So I got every reason to believe that her original owners, her abusers were men.
Yeah.
So that kind of, that was like a natural wariness. And I was afraid that, you know, I just wasn't going to be able to get her around the bend. And it definitely crossed my mind more than once to say, go back to the rescue group and say, I'm not doing something right. And, you know, it was definitely a long period of doubt.
Wow. And that's a common, the whole fear of men thing. I see that in multiple rescues that I've been familiar with. But moving forward, you did leave New Jersey and got out to Vegas. How soon after getting out to Vegas did you get her? Or were you actually getting her active and outside while you were still in New Jersey?
And towards the end of our time in New Jersey, I started kind of taking her out in the woods and just finding a few nature trails in the area. And I could see like a little bit of a demeanor change. You could see she was more comfortable. She was kind of acting like, I guess for lack of a better term, a normal dog. And so when we moved to Las Vegas, I kind of wanted to really exploit that. So if I could get out of work a little early, we'd drive off to the perimeter of the city, find some little trails in the desert, and I'd let her run around. And more I was seeing her just open up.
Yeah.
And like seeing how much she changed, how much she started to kind of reveal her personality when we were out and away from everything. I thought I had maybe found like, you know, that little secret sauce for her rehabilitation. So for, I'd say, the better part of the next year, really, that was the major focus. We kept doing the things like I did in New Jersey where we were, you know, going out for walks late at night. Walking all around the city streets, but as much as I could, we were getting outside of town and just kind of going out and doing our own thing.
Sure.
And day by day, I could see some improvements. Definitely still had those same doubts that I had before, but the improvements became more and more evident. And I think where we finally came around the corner, I'd bought a house when I moved to Las Vegas. It had just been me and Penny up until that point. I put an ad out for a roommate, and, you know, I said a little bit about what I was looking for in a roommate, but I wrote several paragraphs on what kind of dog that potential roommate needed to have. And so, like, the whole focus of the ad was basically, I need your dog to help teach Penny to be a dog. And I eventually found somebody, and I gotta say, it worked beautifully. had a Great Dane move into the house, and he was about a year old
when
they moved in. And it was almost like flicking a switch. It made such an enormous difference so quickly. And over those next several months, like, she kind of finished her transformation. I can remember where I was standing at in the house one day, and I just had the thought come across my mind. It was something to the tune of, like, it happened. Like, she's there. And it was 2 years and 2 months after I first picked her up when I kind of whispered that to myself, I guess.
Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. That's an amazing thing to hear. Socialization with dogs is always a great, great thing.
Yeah. And I had always kind of had an emphasis on socialization, particularly because I wanted her to just be around other dogs to teach her how to be a dog. I mean, we go to the dog park pretty often.
Yeah.
But I think anybody listening that's taken their dog to the dog park, you know, it's not exactly the safest environment sometimes, because
sure.
I wouldn't qualify most dog owners as good dog owners. Don't know how to read the behavior or body language of
yeah.
their dogs. And I eventually just got fed up with some of the personalities I was meeting there. And that's when we wound up having another dog move into the house.
Yeah, I wouldn't even go so far as to call it unsafe. I would just say it's kind of an uncontrolled environment, and it can be a tough place to, especially for a dog that may have, for whatever, may have issues. It's a hard place to do any kind of real work with a dog. So, yeah, it's not a very controlled environment. When you moved out to Las Vegas, were you familiar at all with the area? I mean, had you've been an active person for quite some time, did you have any idea of, you know, where to go, what to do, and specifically getting her out, did you have any idea where to take her other than just the dog park?
And once you get to know me, I think you quickly realize I'm a person that plans absolutely nothing. You know, when the extent of my consideration of whether to take the job out here is, I had a former manager that lived out here, and I just called him up and I said, "Do you think I'll enjoy living out there?" And he goes, "You're gonna love it. There's so much to do outside." And I was like, "All right, I trust you." And that was the sole extent of my decision of whether or not to take the job.
Yeah.
And then I guess when we got here, I just immediately started looking up what kind of outdoor spots there were around us. And you know, if you haven't explored the perimeter of Vegas, like, the geographical diversity is amazing. Not 30 minutes from the Strip, you've got some beautiful mountains that you can hike all through, either trails or just kind of scramble up to the top. And then once you go a few hours outside of Las Vegas into, I'd say, southern Utah in particular, just infinite amount of things to go do outside.
Do you have any local favorites around there? Maybe one or two places that you go to on just a regular basis?
Yeah, by far the most convenient but fun place for me to go is Red Rock, which is just out to the west side of Las Vegas. Only about 30 minutes for us to get there, so I couldn't count the number of times we've gone. You know, wake up early Saturday morning, head out, and you know, no real particular plan, just kind of start scrambling up the mountains and see where we'd wind up.
Okay. Do you know the rules on dogs there? Is it off-leash area, or how does that work?
I'd be lying if I said I knew exactly what the rules are, but, you know, from the very first day I've had Penny, I've trained her to be off-leash. Just a personal opinion as a dog owner, I think it's important to have that level of control. So when we're out, unless I see a sign that explicitly says on leash, she's
sure.
off leash, and I can fully trust that she's not going to run off.
Okay. Besides Red Rock, is there anywhere else in particular around the Vegas area that you try to get to?
Besides Red Rock, we'll go out around Lake Mead. There's quite a few, I'd say maybe hidden spots that we frequent. We'll also just kind of go down to the water. She's definitely become more of a fan of the water over the last couple of years. Besides that, it's pretty typical, especially during the cooler weather, take a couple hour drive and run up to Zion National Park for the day. We'll go down to Page, Arizona relatively often. It's really, you just see how many folks, how many friends within the hiking community here in Vegas are looking to do something that weekend. And, you know, most places do allow dogs. So as long as we got a couple cars worth of people going, I'm always quick to sign up.
Okay. Are there, do you have other friends with dogs? Are y'all able to get out in groups?
I'd say most of my hiking friends do not have dogs, but I do have one in particular. Her dog, Nico, he's a husky German Shepherd mix. Definitely a head turner of a dog. But if you'd like to check out their account, it's Kitten Bear, KittenBear.
Wow. And how does that dog do out in the heat out there?
He's a long-haired dog, but I guess a common misconception is these long-haired dogs don't do well out here. They've actually got an insulating layer, which allows them to bear both the heat and the cold very comfortably. I've actually one of the dogs in my house right now, a husky, he'll lay out by the pool when it's 110 degrees out and stay out there all day without moving.
Okay, that makes sense. I've always thought that undercoat was always just for like insulation, but I didn't stop to think about the fact that, I guess it insulates against both heat and cold. I'm going to kind of go a little bit back because I don't think I really got to ask. When you were living in New Jersey, did you have any favorite spots? I mean, were you going out and doing on the weekends any kind of hiking trails out in New Jersey?
Nothing in particular. There were plenty of areas to go.
Yeah.
I think the biggest issue for me there was that I didn't know anybody else that kind of shared those same interests.
Okay.
Versus when we moved to Las Vegas, there's just so many people within the hiking community. It made it very convenient and exciting to go out and do that stuff all the time.
Yeah, I guess living out there, you're kind of in the almost like the epicenter of backpacking and outdoors and canyoning and stuff like that. So it makes it a lot easier. Once you did start getting out in Vegas and meeting other people, I mean, you started doing some pretty serious stuff. And I'm going to actually kind of, I've got a couple photos and I want to bring some of these up just because I think they're really, really cool. And I just lost it. Have you ever done anything like in the Grand Staircase, Escalante National Monument?
Yeah, I've been out around Escalante a few times.
Okay, we just got back from Hole in the Rock Road. We were out there in December, and we went out to Sunset Arch. Well, we actually got all the way down to Hole in the Rock, and we did a little bit of that. But okay, so I'm going to bring up a couple photos because I'm really curious. And if you don't want to give away the secret spot, you don't have to. So there's this one really great video where it looks like, and it's a slot canyon, and she's kind of making her way through it and doing a really great job of it. Do you know where that's in the Lake Powell area.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. So on that particular weekend, there were probably close to 10 of us out, and our goal was to make it atop Reflection Canyon. And if you've never heard of it, look up a picture of it.
Yeah.
Astounding views. Trouble is, it's about a 20-mile hike in with no shade, no protection from the sun. So we were trying to boat in that weekend. The short of it is we weren't able to find the route up to the top. We got back to Reflection Canyon but couldn't get up top. But after that, we kind of just did some other adventuring, and you know, you'd see all these little slot canyons forming, and we just kind of venture on up and see what we find. And you know, it was really neat how kind of compact and tight it got. And you know, it's pretty typical for any of us to have to stem, where you have your arms and legs on the left and right hand side of the slot to be able to walk through. But watching Penny do it that weekend was really neat, and seeing how comfortably she was able to traverse it, it was awesome. That was a really fun weekend.
Yeah, she's doing a really good job in the video. Actually, probably better than some people do I've seen. The whole Lake Powell area is really, really amazing. I've been out there a couple times, and I've never actually been on the lake, but from what I hear, there's just slot canyons in all directions, and you can kind of find them relatively easy. So,
endless channels going in and out from the main body of water. And I guess what's also pretty neat is it completely transforms based on the water level. So if the water is higher or lower from what last time you went, it's going to be a whole nother experience.
Okay. Yeah. That's one place I really want to get back to and explore more of. Getting into canyoning, it looks like you do a little bit of rappelling and some climbing and stuff, and you've kind of gotten her into that as well. How has that gone? Just going with humans is one thing, but taking a dog and doing any kind of rope work in a canyon can be a whole lot of preparation. I mean, that's got to take some planning.
Yeah, I guess if we rewind a little bit,
sure.
I mentioned, we started doing more and more hikes after we moved to Las Vegas, going into Red Rocks. And, it seemed like there was no end for it. Nothing was too difficult. So, each time we go back, might find a little bit more difficult route. And without fail, she was able to navigate every single one of those routes. So it almost seemed like the natural progression. I was taking her everywhere with me except these canyoneering trips. So I kind of started reading up on how to go canyoneer with your dog. And surprisingly, a pretty high number of articles out there. You'll see a lot of military pages, actually, but also a lot of personal ones. And at the end of the day, it looked like something that was pretty doable. There were harnesses out there made by Roughwear, designed exactly for this. So figured we'd give it a shot. The first time we went canyoneering, I had two friends in particular that were leading this trip and both very well versed in canyoneering. So I figured if at any point I ran into any kind of snag, I had full confidence in them being able to help out.
Okay.
So I felt like I had the right support crew and, just kind of went for it.
So you didn't go into it completely blind?
Not this time. There's some definite risk, and we wanted to make sure to attack that risk from all angles. So I felt we were very safe about it. So many different contingencies in case something were to go wrong, but she was in safe hands, not just by me, but every one of us that were there that day.
About how old was she when you actually started canyoneering with her?
I believe 4 or 5.
So she already had a pretty decent amount of trail experience and hanging out in the desert.
Yeah, we had been on, it seemed like, every square inch of Red Rock Canyon by that point. The only thing we hadn't done was actually go off the cliffs.
Okay. Getting into that in more detail, and of course with a harness, how were you able to, maybe not coerce her, but how were you able to convince her to go into this comfortably? Was it something that she did naturally, or was there a process to it?
The first time was a bit of a challenge. What I love about canyoneering, at least for me, is it kind of always gets the adrenaline going, especially that first rappel of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So, we talked earlier about kind of how dogs can feed off and your energy and read you really well. I was definitely nervous that first time taking her. I wasn't quite sure how to navigate that first step off the cliff. So she was naturally a little nervous. But it went really well. Once we got off the edge of the cliff, she sat beneath me. And my whole concern was, would she start wiggling? Would she start thrashing and trying to get out of that situation? And no, once we were off the cliff, she was as calm as could possibly be.
Okay.
So that first one, it definitely was a process. But after that, that's what was really cool to watch. Like, She seemed to love it. I was a lot more confident at that point. She knew what to anticipate. And now when we go, She walks. I actually got to make sure to clip her into my harness relatively early, but she'll start walking out towards the edge on her own.
Yeah.
But basically, I'll just lean off the edge of the cliff. I'll walk off myself, and she kind of tiptoes out, and then she just jumps off on her own power.
Wow.
And, you know, I'll kind of lower. She dangles about 4 feet beneath me. I'll kind of lower to that point, and we're off to the races. And as soon as we hit the ground, I unclip her. And it's almost the exact same reaction every time. I unclip her, like she jumps up onto my body and then kind of goes off running in a little circle of excitement almost.
Yeah.
It's really fun to watch.
That is impressive. In situations where, let's say you're not using a rope, I see that you do have a couple shots where you've got her over your shoulders. And also, I think there was one here somewhere where it looks like you're using a sling to carry her. Have there been any other techniques you've used to get her up and down drops?
Yeah, so if it's a relatively short, like, little cliff or something, I'll throw her on my back. And same thing, she kind of just hangs on and knows exactly what to do because we've done it a bunch of times now.
Okay.
The one with the sling, that was actually my hammock.
Oh, really?
I got my hammock tied around both of us. Since we were probably 10 or 12 feet off the ground on a pretty rickety ladder. Just in case she kind of lost her grasp, I wanted a little security blanket there.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing we'll do from time to time is if it's just a small vertical cliff that I've got a down climb or something, I'll actually put her across my arms. And so I'll down climb just like normal. I just happen to have a 60-pound dog chased across me.
That can be quite a bit. Yeah. I'm kind of looking through some of the photos right now, so I'm kind of...
Yeah, but any one of these techniques, though, she makes it super easy on me. She doesn't move. She understands kind of like what we're doing, and she just waits till we get to the ground. I'll kind of give her the release command, and off we go.
Okay, so you do a release command. Are there any other commands that you use to while you're canyoneering with her?
Not a whole lot. And I guess the reason for that, it kind of goes back to that off-leash training.
Yeah.
She knows to stay right by my side. She doesn't wander off. When I say stop, she knows to stop. When
okay.
I point in whatever direction, she goes in that direction. So, again, she makes it easy on me.
She's got a good recall then. Okay, cool. Gosh. Yeah, sorry. I'm a little slow right now because I'm mesmerized by some of these photos. Any idea about how many times you've actually rappelled with her? I mean, are we talking about 10, 20, or hundreds?
I wish it was hundreds. It's probably around 15 or 20. 15 or 20 different trips, I guess. And then, you know, each one of those will have anywhere from like 5 to like maybe 15 rappels in it.
A lot of the places, you're going with other people and you're getting belayed, or are there fixed like tie-ins on some of these, or how does that work?
It depends. They're always well scouted. We're definitely not the first going down, so
sure.
No, I guess traditional climbing or anything.
Okay.
But you know, sometimes it's a tree for an anchor. I've been to a place with a jet engine for an anchor. and some of the even the good old fashioned meat anchors, where I'll just tie somebody into me and I lean back, and that's the best we can do.
Wow. Okay, I gotta stop looking at photos, or I'll forget what we were talking about. Y'all do some backpacking as well. Does she carry any of her own stuff, or do y'all do overnight trips as well?
Yeah, I think it was another natural progression. Not only did the hikes get a little bit more difficult, we also started doing some longer ones. So I guess our longest journey, in a short amount of time at least, we did about 55 miles in 3 days.
Okay.
And that was to go to Havasupai Falls. I think you've inevitably seen photos of that at this point.
I have, and I've actually got it open on my page because I was eventually going to ask about that, but you actually just went right into it. Yeah, tell me about this place. I would love to hear this.
Yeah, so I went to Havasupai for the first time a few years back. Wasn't entirely sure what to anticipate. I had heard there were plenty of dogs down there, but very few people bring in their own. Okay. So I didn't breed at that time, which wound up being an immediate regret. So I went again the following year, and 100% I was bringing her that time, and had an absolute blast. And you know, she did. I was carrying my pack, she was carrying hers. She got a couple of different packs depending on whether it's a day hike, a couple of days, or several days. But typically for these longer ones, she has a 20-liter bag, so she'll carry her own food, some of her extra gear like water bowls, boots, socks, goggles. She carries all that on her own. I'll take the brunt of it and carry the extra water weight. But yeah, besides that, she takes care of herself.
For those trips, are you using anything special food-wise to save weight, or just using pretty standard, just dog the? And I see you've got some posts about what y'all use for feeding, but have you ever tried using like freeze-dried food to save weight?
There's probably a few things I could do to make it a little bit lighter, but I'm not one to really care about pack weight.
Okay.
any kind of trip, I inevitably become the pack mule anyway, carrying the extra ropes and gears and everything else. So yeah, if I gotta carry a couple extra pounds of food for, I'm not sweating it.
Did you plan for a specific number of days, or, you know, was it just kind of you just had an idea of where you were going, but not sure how long it would take, or how did that work out?
That one we did have a plan. Havasupai is permitted, and it's very difficult to get a permit. So we knew we had 3 days, two nights, and we knew exactly what we wanted to see and do because everybody I was there with, we had all been before. But on this particular trip, we were making the journey all the way to the Colorado River, which involves another 15 to 20 miles compared to what most folks do when they're going down to the falls. So we knew we had a lot of ground to cover, not a lot of time to do it, but I was confident Penny would be able to stay caught up, and she did a great job.
And I guess it was permitted. That's on Havasupai Indian Reservation, which is just south of the Grand Canyon, and actually I guess from where the Grand Canyon National Park is, that's kind of off to the west. Is that correct?
Yeah, the property borders it, and,
okay,
and when you're walking towards the Colorado River, you actually pass in the Grand Canyon National Park.
Okay. Yeah, I won't give all the details away on this one because I think it's a really cool place, and I would love for people that are interested to kind of do a little bit of research, just because it's I don't want to totally spoil it. It's kind of cool to find out a little bit of information, but I'll definitely give the name of this just because I think it's beautiful and it is amazing. I do have a question, though. You say it was difficult to get a permit. How difficult was that? And did you have to have a separate permit for the dog as well?
I haven't been to Havasupai in the last couple of years. I know it's gotten like an order of magnitude more difficult to get a permit. So basically the phone lines open up at sometime in February.
Yeah.
And you just got to be prepared to call hundreds of times. And it's almost like hitting the lottery. Like you just get lucky, get through. You've got to reserve so many permits for a certain amount of time. They've gotten a lot more expensive.
Okay.
But my personal opinion is the most beautiful place I've ever been to in the U.S. So if you can find your way there, absolutely worth it. And, you know, I've got tons of notes of some hidden gems that not necessarily everyone's going to see or even read about online when they're planning out their trip. In terms of a permit for Penny, at the time, dogs were allowed. I have heard from a couple of folks that they're no longer allowing dogs.
Okay.
I don't know if either of what I just said were true. but, you know, I met with several of the rangers while we were there, while I had Penny, and it was no issue at all at that time, at least.
Well, I'll look into it, and I'll include some of this information in the show notes for the people that are interested in going there and looking up. I'm super interested. This is like probably one of the big items on my list right now. Speaking of, you mentioned it's kind of like a lottery. I'm familiar with the, or you might be familiar with it as well, the Wave, which is the Wave up near on the border of Arizona and Utah. And that's one I've been trying to do for a couple of years. And every time I try to get into that one, it's just impossible. So one of these days I'm going to hit the wave. Maybe I can do Havasu Falls on the same trip. That would be really cool.
Yeah, I've been in the lottery for the wave several times, but have yet to win.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. I've actually shown up at the ranger station in Kanab in Utah to get that. And the morning we showed up, there must have been 80 people standing in line ahead of me. And I thought I was early. I was an hour early, and some of those people had been there for 2 hours waiting. So,
yep, sounds about right.
Yep, definitely tough. You mentioned a couple places in Utah, heading into Zion National Park. It's not a whole lot of places you can go with your dog in Zion. Is there anywhere in particular that you recommend there?
Yeah, that's a tough one, unfortunately. They're definitely sticklers. There's very limited trail space where you can actually take your dogs in Zion. But around the perimeter of the park, I've done some canyons, and I'm really bad about remembering the names of these places, but
that's fine.
There's one canyon in particular I've taken Penny to a couple of times, actually. And it, basically, when you're exiting the canyon, you turn one way, it takes you back towards the parking lot. You turn the other way, and it actually drops you into the Narrows in Zion. So there's some really cool spots. I mean, obviously, anyone that's been to Zion, you know, like, you're just surrounded by giant cavernous mountains in every direction. So if you know where to look, there's definitely lots of hidden gems out there.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we were saying with Lake Powell earlier, and almost all of southern Utah. It's just kind of places everywhere across southern Utah have some amazing, mostly hidden little gems. You just kind of have to know where to look for them.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess that kind of leads us to the next part. Do you have any future trips planned anywhere special that you're headed to?
I'd say a rather open-ended agenda. I do independent consulting for a living, which means I don't necessarily know where I'm going to be at any given time. But I think our next longer-term trip, at least, is from a prior trip. My truck is sitting in Georgia, and I need to get it back to Las Vegas. So if I can get the right work remote contract lined up, I'm hoping to do around a 5-6 week cross-country trip where we hopefully dot in, spend some time in Canada as well. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed on that one, but no definitive plans yet.
Okay, so once you do get home to Georgia and get your truck driving up to Canada, and, you know, actually, I'm just even going to skip that part. I'm just going to go ahead and get to probably my favorite question of every interview. If I could take away all your responsibilities, you don't have to work, don't worry about anything, you don't even have to plan anything, I'll do all the planning for you. And if you could go anywhere with Penny, where would that be?
I would love to be able to travel internationally with her.
Okay.
I think the pit bull stigma, it definitely stretches beyond just the United States.
Sure.
You've got, I've spent some time in Singapore, and they've outlawed pits. I've spent time in Thailand, they've outlawed them. The UK, I believe, reserves the right to kill pit bulls on site. There's lots of restrictions all around the world for, I say pit bull, it's the pit-like breed or the aggressive breed dog that a lot of our politicians like to describe them as.
Yeah.
I love being able to have the opportunity to hopefully dismiss some of those negative predisposition folks have.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if I could take her internationally to places where pits were not allowed, that would be my first desire.
Anywhere specific? And I'm just going to go ahead and say that leading into this trip, we are going to go through the entire process of eliminating BSL, and wherever you want to go, it will be open. I wish I could say that. I wish that was actually true. It's so frustrating. But is there anywhere specifically, if there were no laws, that you could go, if, you know, aside from that?
no restrictions to worry about. The first place I'm taking her is New Zealand. I've been lucky enough to spend several weeks in New Zealand, and the South Island in particular is absolutely gorgeous. Huge rolling mountains, beautiful beaches, and trails going in absolutely every direction. So if I could just go take her there with each of us with our backpack, that would be an absolute blast.
Done. I will start the work now. And of course, we'll make it so that you can get to Georgia first, up to Canada, like you mentioned earlier, and then from there, just head on to New Zealand, if that sounds okay to you.
That would definitely be a dream come true.
So is there anyone that you want to give a shout out to, either on Instagram or in real life? And I'll actually start this one out. I want to bring up the adoption or the rescue group earlier.
The rescue group I got her from was Fur Friends in Need.
Okay. And they're on Instagram as Fur Friends in Need, and with underscores. So @fur_friends_in_need. And of course, I'll put all this in the show notes too, so you don't have to remember all this. You can just go look at the show notes later if you're listening to this. But yeah, who else did you want to, who else would you like to highlight?
So I guess one would be, my friend Sally Benson. Her handle, Sally Benson Photography. She's led quite a few canyoneering trips, that Penny's been on, an amazing photographer. And we've done a lot of hikes together over the years. A shout out to Kitten Bear as well. So that's Penny's other adventure dog buddy here in Las Vegas. And Miko is like a mountain goat. Nothing slows him down. So he was a good teacher for Penny when they first met one another. And I guess one final thing would be to the dodo. I don't think Penny's notoriety would have ever made it to where it is right now without their help. We originally partnered up for a video a couple years ago, and, you know, I'd attribute it to, like, the true authenticity of all of the content. It wound up doing really well. So we've done had a couple of other engagements with the dodo since then, got another one coming up in a couple of months, actually. But thanks to them, Penny's been viewed over 100 million times at this point, I think, between all the videos.
Okay. And I guess, you know, one question I actually kind of I forgot to go into, you know, we talked a little bit about what you use for her for canyoneering. The only other real question I had was, is there any specific tips or recommendations you can make for people that might be interested in getting into canyoneering or doing specifically like dog repelling stuff?
I think anyone looking to do more with their dog, the one thing I'd stress more than anything is be patient. You know, Penny, it was a 2-year transformation just to go from kind of her shy, timid self to being, you know, outside on a regular basis. But it was a whole nother probably year and a half before we got to the point of going rappelling for the first time.
Okay.
And I didn't want to push her too fast. I didn't want to throw her into something she wasn't ready for. And I mean, if you've got your dog out on trails, you can read their relative comfort in a hurry. And anybody that's, you know, taking their dog rappelling before, they'll probably share a similar story where that first time it's tricky, your heart's pounding, you're not sure what to anticipate. But any dog that's ready for it, they're probably going to respond similar to how Penny did. And what I mean by that is they'll be ready to jump off the cliff on their own once you've done it a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's always been my biggest recommendation for anyone getting out is start out slow and make sure you're being safe about it and make sure, most importantly, that your dog is happy.
That's it.
Well, cool. Well, man, this has been really awesome talking to you. You're the first guy that's been on the podcast, which is apparently a big deal. It's really hard to find dudes out there that have dogs that want to talk about it. So man, thanks for coming on for that alone. Just that's a big deal, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure.
Very much.
Absolutely.
And Penny is an amazing dog, and her story is just it's super cool. And it's unfortunate because I think her story is a common story, and it's just really nice to see where you've gone with it and the way that you've told her story. More than anything, I appreciate that so much. I think a lot of what we see with rescue, it's really hard to hear sometimes, and yours is just this an amazing story when it comes to that.
I appreciate that. I've got a deep love for animals in general. Even before I had Penny, I tried to do a lot of volunteer work focused on animals. And if folks haven't heard the saying, I'm going to say it. But it goes something like, if you can't rescue, then you can foster. If you can't foster, then you can volunteer. If you can't volunteer, you can donate. So, there's several different capacities at which you can help dogs, cats, or anything else out there. Just take the time to go do it. There's a ton of reward in it.
Absolutely. Well, Blaine, thank you again so much. It's been really awesome having you on. And, yeah, hopefully the next time that I am out that way, I will have to be in touch with you, because it looks like all the cool places to go. So I'm going to have to hook up with you and figure some of these places out.
Oh, no doubt about it. If we're in town, we'll take you somewhere fun.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Good chatting.
And that was Blaine at Penny Dog with an I. But seriously, if you didn't go check out his Instagram already, you should go do that as soon as you can. Especially scroll back a ways and read about their story, which he's broken down very conveniently into chapters about her rescue and rehabilitation. I mean, you will not be disappointed. His photos are great. They're just beautiful places all over the West. And the two have been featured in a Dodo video. They've been on the front page of National Geographic Online, an article in USA Today. The list just goes on. And all of it, the message is just really simple. Every dog, no matter what breed or what they've suffered through, deserves to live a full and happy life. And being active is part of that recovery. It should be part of any dog's normal life. And no, you don't have to rappel and zip line with your dog. But getting outside and even just exploring your neighborhood is essential to your pup's happiness. And you might find it'll change your life too. I especially like, and I want to repeat what Blaine said towards the end of the interview. If you can't rescue, then you can foster. If you can't foster, then you can volunteer. And if you can't volunteer, you can donate. I think that that's a pretty fitting way to end today's show. So go check out the show notes on the blog at adventuredogpodcast.com to see all of the unbelievable places and people and info from the interview. To highlight some of those places, I will be posting a few pics over the next few days of places in that area that we talked about. As always, you can drop me a line at Adventure Dog Podcast on Instagram or email me at nathan@adventuredogpodcast.com. Hit that subscription button on iTunes, and if you like what you hear, consider giving us a rating and review. Rue and I would be extremely grateful. Thank you for listening. Now, go and have an adventure with your doggos.